I'm Toby Fox from 1.5 million New Homes, the local government challenge sponsored by Redloft and Waites. We're investigating the role of local councils in the government's national ambition to deliver 1.5 million new homes. So in this episode, we've come to talk to Councillor Dominic Toomey, who's the leader of Barking and Dagenham Council, about the local politics of delivering new homes in Barking and Dagenham. So, Councillor Toomey, Dominic, tell us a little bit about the local politics of housing delivery in Barking and Dagenham. What's the balance of resistance to encouragement, YIMBYs and NIMBYs?
I would imagine, Toby, if you talk to our community, those phrases wouldn't roll off the tongue, or those acronyms wouldn't roll off the tongue at all, YIMBYs, NIMBYs. Most people would look at you and say, like, what even is that? So I think to some extent there's an ambivalence to those phrases. If you then dug down into it and said to people, what do you think of the change? Do you want more change here? Yep. Are you happy with the change, or do you really not want it? I think there'd be different camps, as if you'd expect that. I definitely don't think we've got a significant level of NIMBYs, because I think actually we're a borough that's been very pro-growth and have talked to our community about that. But, and there's always a but in these things, you reach a point now where people are actually saying to us, you're building a lot, aren't you? There's a lot of sort of high-rise particularly. There's a lot of new flats come in. And it's not actually the building of the flats or the houses or the apartments. It's the infrastructure where people see it when they go into their doctor's surgery or don't go into the surgery because they can't get an appointment for 2 weeks or they're trying to get on public transport and it's absolutely swamped, or they're trying to, you know, get hospital appointments. So all of that infrastructure stuff is really playing into the fact. So it's difficult to gauge whether people are people understand that, you know, there's a lot of need. So even our community we've got a high level of sort of young adults still living at home with mum and dad. Mm-hmm. Now they would, I'm sure mum and dad, we've all been there. I would, you know, like my 25, 26, 27-year-old son, for a number of reasons, to go and, you know, find somewhere to live that he's happy in. Yeah. Whether that's rental, whether he's fortunate enough to get on the, on the ladder to buy a property, whether it's housing association, whether it's council, which is very, very difficult these days. But so people see the need for it because they experience it, but then they say, but how are you going to cope?
And how are you responding to that? Because that sounds to me like a planning issue. You have to put the infrastructure in first in order to accommodate that growth. Is that what's happened?
I think it's chicken and egg sometimes, isn't it? What comes first? You're absolutely right. We need the infrastructure. We work with partners. We work with the NHS. So it is planning. But ultimately, there's a big role in that for other partners as well. So we are working with people to deliver that infrastructure. But actually, you need that almost at the same time as the build. And that's very hard to do that in sort of, you know, synergy. Often the house building comes first, and then you try and then sort of almost backfill. So Barking Riverside, for argument's sake, classic example. You know, the development on there has been, you know, over a couple of decades.
Yeah.
And we got a train station 3 or 4 years ago now. Yeah. So actually fantastic, but the train station was only going to come through sort of TfL, except once the quantum of people living there made that a viable option. Yeah. So it's a really difficult question. You really want to put infrastructure in and then actually start to build out after that. But of course, that's all money and investment that isn't there.
And there's only so much that the council can do to create that infrastructure. It's not necessarily the council's job to be building the NHS facilities, the train stations.
Correct, so we collaborate, we work, and that's the important thing, because it is so vital. But you're right, it's not. We don't have all of the levers to push that through.
So given that, how is the sort of national policy being received locally, this ambition to build 1.5 million new homes more recently, but generally for the last few years? You know, we've got to build more homes, and they're going to go in Barking, because Barking's a place where we can get them built. How is that received?
I think that's received differently in different parts of the community. Mm. So I think people that have lived here for a long time, maybe don't have sort of grown-up children still living with them, don't like it. Mm. So you could probably start to put them in that NIMBY sort of bracket, where actually they're saying, you're bringing all this change in, we don't like it, we liked Barking and Dagenham as it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, loads more people, not enough facilities to sort of support everybody, so we don't like it. Then you've actually got groups of people that say, the borough needs change.
Yeah.
You know, my family need housing as well, so actually we welcome change because, you know, change improvement should actually flow out to everybody, so that's important. And interestingly, though, then we get people that move in to our new properties, our new regeneration, not just our own council ones, but stuff that has been built by other developers. And now even there, and they're a little bit more vocal. You know, they've maybe come from outside the borough, or they're a little bit more affluent, you know, professional people, and they're a little bit like, okay, you now need to sort of have a look at how you're doing this regeneration now, because you've got to make sure the place shaping happens as well. So they're more vocal, and which is important. We encourage that. We really want our residents to be vocal and to input into everything from, I am still the finance portfolio holder.
Yep.
So we go out to budget consultation on finance, and I'm forever saying, respond. Have your say. Tell us what it is, because actually this is going to impact on you directly, either through your pocket or through the area you live in. And we might get 300 responses maybe to a budget consultation out of a population of, well, if you take children out of it, out of a population of probably 150,000, 160,000 people.
But nobody really wants to talk when they're happy. They don't want to talk when they're not happy. So how are you balancing all of those dynamics? How are you getting people to come along on that journey of growth and development and housing delivery with you?
Well, it all boils down to communication, doesn't it? I mean, I know that's an easy sort of strap line to chuck at it, but it is communication. It's absolutely key. We are encouraging people through all of the channels that we can possibly do, not just our own channels, not just through Be First, which is obviously our regeneration arm, but through our local community groups, through the voluntary sector, through the faith sector. We're trying to put out key messages through all of those partners so it filters directly in to people, you know, and they don't have to come to the council.
Yeah.
It's there in their own community. So if it's their local church, if it's their local tenant resident association, we are really trying to push our messages through all of those channels, because the best will in the world talked about sort of national policy, sort of dripping down into local policy through local plans and that. Like, you know, it's really difficult to read, right, the local plan and absorb it all. And our residents, just like many residents, are not going to do that. So actually, you need to be able to, you know, chunk that down into bite-sized, easily understandable things, but you need to also take it to the residents rather than expect the residents sort of to come to you.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the local plan, because I wanted to get into that. I'm interested in how effective the local plan is as a mechanism for engaging with local people. It's something that government is really keen to stress, because we need local people to understand what's going to happen and to be able to shape what's going to happen. Mm. But is the local plan the right mechanism for that, do you think? Or does it need to change? Or
I think it's sort of horses for courses in different places. Mm. I'm sure a local plan, I mean, we're ahead of the game to some extent. We adopted our local plan towards the end of last year. I think we were the first London borough to get a local plan through
and
the process.
Pioneering again.
Well, we're trying to pioneer wherever we can, but it is really important because, you know, I think there's two aspects to the local plan. Yes, for residents actually to be able to inform them, for them to be able to look at that and say, okay, this is what's going to happen. But I think certainty for external, for developers, for investors. So once you've got it there and they can look at that and say, okay, we see the parameters, we know what we've got to do, so it takes a bit of uncertainty out in what is a very uncertain world, you know, in terms of finance and planning and all of those sort of different facets to sort of delivery. So, but it's really important that our local plan reflects not just the building of, you know, housing, for example, regeneration, but it supports the groups that we want to support it to. It also supports that social regeneration, that place shaping, so that actually we're able to say, listen, if you want to come here, if you want to sort of do business here, we are open for business and we have got a good track record of delivery and supporting people and working with developers and investors. But actually, there are key things that you need to be looking at doing before we even start those conversations. So I think it adds certainty. So it's
And is that true for residents as well? Because we were talking about infrastructure earlier. So in the local plan, you can see that the infrastructure is going to be provided and when. And if local people are still kind of worried about that, that's still a concern, does that indicate that, that the local plan is really a bit opaque? It's not a great mechanism for engaging.
I think that's right. I think local plans are in different areas. You know, we're a very deprived borough. So we've done fantastic work, but we're still a very deprived borough. Mm-hmm. And best will in the world, reading a local plan is going to be really low down on a lot of people's priorities. So, you know, chaotic lifestyles because of deprivation through no choice of their own. You know, people working really, really hard, but just to stand still. Mm-hmm. So often people in work poverty is a big issue in Barking and Dagenham. So you imagine you've got a young family, you know, you do all the school stuff, you go to work probably 40, 45 hours a week. You might have two jobs, low paid, but actually you might have a cleaning job and then another job. You're coming home 6 o'clock at night. You're trying to support the children. You're trying to feed them. You've got to put them to bed. You're not going to want to be reading a local plan. Best will in the world. And that's only one part of our community. But there are other parts of our community, as I said, that are actually, you know, in the new developments. So, I mean, I'm being very generalistic here. That there are residents that will read our local plan that have lived there for their whole life. But I think as a document, what we know is it's very, you know, formulaic. It's there are certain things that have to go in there, irrespective of whether or not it really applies to sort of the area to get that through the hurdles and the mechanisms. So I don't like rigidity. I like to actually sort of have some sort of flexibility in. So even though we set our local plan, obviously that's still then got to go through the external, you know, validation to get it through, and you've got to do certain things. So, and I'm not sure that's always the best way. But equally, I know that you've got to have standards, national standards that you need to achieve as well. So I personally think that, you know, it being more simplistic would massively help a huge number of people, not just in Barking and Dagenham, but across the country.
Does it matter if large sections of the population aren't involved in the local planning side of the process? Does it matter if they're not, as long as you're making things better, you know?
Well, it's very, it's subjective, isn't it, making things better? Mm. Now, you think you're doing the right thing. We learned long ago, I'd like to think we learned long ago that actually we didn't want to stay as a paternalistic council, telling people what was good for them, what was... And you sort of potentially fall into that trap a little bit. If we think we know what's best, which is by delivering thousands and thousands of homes in certain areas... Mm. You do need input, so it does matter. I mean, for me, the more people that feed in to a process, then the better the process will be and the better the outcomes and outputs will be. And that doesn't matter whether or not people are positive, negative, it's just their views. And you need to just capture as many views as possible. So I'm a Gascoyne ward councillor as well as being leader. Now, Gascoyne, one of the most deprived boroughs in Barking and Dagenham, which made it one of the most deprived boroughs in the country. Mm-hmm. We had the Gascoyne estate, which was, people say to me, of its time, right? Mm-hmm. And I look and I think, well, what time? What time made these horrible grey high-rise blocks good? I don't know. But there was a time, right? I'm going to accept that because people have got memories, fond memories of that, actually. Yeah. And without deviating too much, I know when I first became a councillor, my key aim was to knock that estate down.
Okay.
Because it was synonymous with antisocial behaviour. Yeah. It was pretty unpleasant. Yeah. And I thought to myself, right, that's it. That's a key thing for me as a councillor. It was part of, you know, the reason I got involved with it. Or I had family living on there many years ago. And I remember going to the first meeting. So I'd managed to get agreement from the leader at the time to actually, you know, start the process of demolishing 15 high-rise blocks and some low-rise blocks over a period of time, which now manifests itself into what we're doing today as well. So it's been quite a long journey. And I remember the very first consultation, sent out loads of letters to residents living in the high-rise blocks, said, like, we're actually going to, you know, resolve your housing issues, we're going to do this, do that. And I remember walking into the first meeting, there was probably, and it's very well attended for Barking and Dagenham, well over 100 people in the room.
Yeah.
I honestly walked in there naively thinking, like, people were going to give me a standing ovation or something. Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, he's going to sort all the housing
our
problems.
Our hero, yeah.
And I remember I got to the front of the thing and I was introduced and people were very antagonistic at the start. They were like, I've lived here 20 years. Why are you taking my home? Why are you doing this? And I would be saying, yeah, because we've got problems with the fabric of the building. We've got, you know, people weren't even getting good TV reception because the aerials outside were damaged. You know, all of that stuff, you know, all of the antisocial stuff played into it. And it was a very sobering lesson for me to learn quite early on, which I was pleased about, is that, you know, no matter how much you think you are doing the right thing, which sort of comes back to the conversation about, you know, is it good that, or is it okay that people don't understand? It's subjective. Mm. And some people, no matter how much there's a label that it's not a good area or it's not a good community or it's a bad block of flats, it's people's homes and they've lived there for a long time. And whether or not you're actually directly doing something with their home that they're living in or actually you're doing stuff nearby, it has a fundamental impact on what people see in terms of their everyday living. So sorry, I know I've gone off tangent there, but in terms of those local projects, so Gascoigne is very much, you know, a localised sort of project that, you know, I was very keen on being the councillor. No more keen than all of the other stuff, I might add. I haven't got that biasness, but, you know, helping to set up or facilitating resident forums, for example, where you just put it out there. You don't pick people.
Yep.
You put it out there, you say, you know, we want your views. We want you to come and tell us about, you know, what you would want in a development. Mm. You know, how is it going to affect you? What do you think are going to be the problematic, you know, touch points? What can we do to sort of, you know, lessen those or bring something that you really want? And they've, you know, proven to be incredibly successful because, as I say, you're going out into the community.
Yeah.
You're not telling people what you're going to do. You're giving them an idea of what you'd like to do.
Yeah.
And you're saying to them, what do you think?
So that wraps up another episode of 1.5 Million New Homes, the Local Government Challenge, sponsored by Redloft and Waites. We're going to be back in a few days with another episode, and we look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, if you like what you've seen, please do click like or subscribe. It really helps us. Thank you very much for watching.